Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. This is the Entree Architect Podcast, episode 99. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. So you've listened to episode 97, and you have your upcoming self-published book all figured out. You know what you're writing about, you know to whom you're writing, you know exactly how to sit down every day and write, to create a habit of writing. Yes, you can do it in addition to being a full-time architect if you want to. You even know how to publish your book on the largest platform for selling books, Amazon.com. So if you haven't listened to episode 97, go do that first, because this is part two of this series about publishing books. But putting the book out there is only half the equation. Now that you have your book ready for the world to read, you need to get to work and let them know that it's available. This week on the Entree Architect Podcast, we have the fourth in the Field Guide series and part two about self-publishing your book. This week, Eric Reinhold of 30 by 40 Design Workshop is back to talk with us about marketing your self-published book as a small firm architect. This episode of the Entree Architect Podcast is sponsored by Arcasnapper, a great way to create and manage field reports. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/Arcasnapper. And FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, and track your time. Learn more at freshbooks.com/architect. Eric Reinhold, welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. Glad to be here. I think you're going to have to anoint me a co-host pretty soon.
Yeah, it sounds good. You know, in the back of my head, I've been thinking about that. I think you and I do a good job with these, and I like
it's
our conversations.
Fun.
Yeah. Just for anybody who doesn't know Eric Reinhold, this is our fourth in a series of field guide podcasts, basically talking about business and all different things. In our first episode, episode 84, we basically talked about startup design businesses and building and branding and marketing startup design businesses. That was episode 84. Episode 89, we talked passive income for small firm architects. And just a couple of episodes ago, in episode 97, we talked self-publishing, putting together your own book and how to get that thing published and out to the world. Eric is the is an architect, and he's the founder of 30 by 40 Design Workshop. He's based up in Maine in Mount Desert. He has actually Desert. I always say that wrong. Mount Desert.
That's right.
He's a modern architect. He's written two books, Unofficial Guide to House.com and the Architect and Entrepreneur Field Guide for Branding, Building Branding and Marketing Your Startup Design Business. And you can find all that stuff on his website at 30by40.com and writes a great blog. He's also putting together his third book, which we may get into a little bit here. If not, I'm sure he'll let us know when that thing's ready to roll. And we'll talk about that some more. But we're not going to get too deep into his origin story and where he came from and how he designs residential modern architecture on a small island in Maine. How does he get all that done? Go back to episode 84, and he talks all about his origin story. This is the, we're going to talk about marketing your self-published book. So last episode, we talked about, you know, how to come up with the idea for your book, how to write your book, how to create habits for writing, how to actually get the book done, and how to publish it, how to get it all together and put it out on Amazon and get it out into the world. So we talked all about that in episode 97. Today, there's a whole nother world. After you get it up there, you got to tell the world that you have a book and you need to kind of get them there and get them to buy it. So how do we do that? That's marketing. And Eric's going to talk to us today about how to do that next step, how to create marketing and how to create strategies for selling that book. So Eric, welcome again to the podcast, and let us know how do we go from once we get it published, what do we do next?
Well, it's good to be here, Mark. Thanks for that introduction. I thought I'd kind of just start the marketing discussion by reminding people that, you know, the marketplace is a huge factor in this whole thing. And so we've already talked about, you know, establishing our book on the Amazon marketplace because they own basically 60% of market share in the digital book business. There's also the iBook store, which is, you know, run by Apple. They hold about 20%. And then, of course, Barnes & Noble holds 15%. And together, they account for 95% of all digital book sales in the U.S. So obviously, we're going to focus our efforts on the Amazon platform. And to do that, you kind of have to understand the rules of that marketplace. And so Amazon has a couple of really important ones that I like to start with. And so first of all, you need to know that sales on Amazon equal relevance in their search engine. So, you know, if you figure Google, as you're searching Google, you're coming up with topics, and relevance is determined in Google's search algorithm by, you know, how people use the site, how long they're there, how many backlinks are there. But on Amazon, what they care about is how well a book sells. So if your book is selling well, they're going to promote you higher in the search rankings. And that's kind of, you know, that's obviously what you want. Now, there's a window into figuring out how well books are selling on Amazon. You can look at what's called the BSR, or bestseller sales rank. And so as you look at, you know, if you choose any book on Amazon and you click down in the description, you'll see a number and it'll say the sales rank number. The lower the number, the better. And on Amazon, they categorize digital books with their own sales ranks. Physical books have their own sales ranks. And then products obviously have their own sales ranks. So you can be number one in the Kindle bookstore with a sales rank of one, and you're selling many thousands of books a day. So obviously, you want to be on the lower end of the sales rank. Now, to do that, and obviously, you can, as you look at these books, you know, if you see a book with a sales rank of 100,000, between 50 and 100,000, you can figure that those books are selling, you know, roughly one book per day. So as you sort of triage where you're going to place your book, how you're going to categorize your book in Amazon, you want to pay attention to those rankings, because obviously you want to be, you want to place your book as a new author into a category where there's not as much competition. So, you know, obviously a category that has sales rank books of, you know, 100,000 plus, that's a pretty good category as a new author to start exploring. So that's another thing that you need to pay attention to on Amazon. The next thing is that the top three positions of any keyword or category is actually where 50 to 60% of all the sales in that keyword or category come. So you really want to be in those top three positions. And so that's all part of figuring.
So 50% of the books sold in that category go to the top three in the ranking.
That's right. Yeah. So this kind of fits into our marketing strategy. Like, okay, we have to figure out where we have a niche with that has decent traffic, but also low competition, because you want to be in these sort of bestseller ranked categories. And if you notice, as you're browsing on Amazon, just shopping for books or anything, they have a list of the sort of top 100 bestseller products in those categories. You want to be in as many of those as you possibly can, because with marketing on Amazon, you want them to take over the marketing for you. They've built this great search engine and this great marketing engine for you. All you need to do is kind of tap into that. And so these are some of the ways that you can do that. The next one that's really important, and everyone's probably experienced this, are reviews. So as you're thinking about how to market your book, you want to be looking for ways to get, you know, positive reviews of your book. This is, you know, social proof. It's honest feedback on, you know, how good your book is, what a great work it is. And so once you get to a certain threshold, and on Amazon, it's roughly 20 reviews, Amazon steps in and they start taking over the marketing for you. They'll actually even buy product listing ads on Google for people searching for keyword terms related to your book. So once you get to some of these magical numbers, you know, these sales rank, these good sales ranks, you know, you're ranking for keywords and categories, Amazon steps in and says, oh, wait, this must be a good product. This must be a good book. And we're going to help you push that. And once Amazon does that, you start appearing in more and more searches, and then more people buy it. And you can see that it has this cascading effect where, you know, more people are buying and more. And so that's the kind of promotional engine you want to tap into.
So the more you sell, the more you sell.
That's right.
Okay.
Now there are other ways, obviously, outside of Amazon that we can start driving traffic to Amazon. And, you know, as we think about when to begin marketing a book, the ideal time is really while you're writing it. So you want to start, you know, thinking about marketing while you're just beginning writing. You know, who is this for? Start thinking about who you can contact. Who in your network, you know, would this appeal to, and how can you enlist their help? And so as you're writing the book, you're thinking about those things, and it's never too early to start building an email list. And this is a strategy that sort of extends beyond just selling books, but also to your firm in general. If you can build an email list around, you know, an interested group of people who are your fans, you have then a channel that you can begin using to market and speak. You know, you have a conversation with these people, start speaking to them, and then you can begin the marketing process for your book or any other product that you develop. So that's a good sort of early step as you're writing your book to begin building this email list and really crafting the content for the people that you're going to be promoting it to. Now, once you have your book already uploaded to Amazon, you want to make sure you're creating, you know, a listing that's worthy of promotion. And so on Amazon, that consists of a couple of things. And we talked about this a little bit last time, but it's worth repeating. A good cover design is really important. You want to basically remove the barriers for a prospect contemplating the purchase of your book. You know, you want to make it look as professional as you possibly can. And also, you want to remember that it's going to be viewed at a really small size. So as you're, you know, browsing books on Amazon, they're just thumbnail images. So you're not looking to sort of convey the entire content of the book in a small thumbnail image, but you want to make it graphically bold. You want to make it stand out, you know, be recognizable. And I like using sort of bold text. That's a sort of simple hack, a simple shortcut for doing that. But your cover design really needs to sort of be bold and be recognizable.
Yeah, if you go on Amazon and you search the ebook store, the Kindle store, you'll see the difference. It'll scream at you the books that are designed well and the ones that are not designed well. And take note of how you feel about those books and whether you would trust those books and whether you'd buy them or not. So cover right. really makes a difference.
It does, for sure. The second thing on Amazon, you know, creating a listing worthy of promotion, the second thing is to write a compelling description. And, you know, you want to treat this sort of like a problem solution, almost like an FAQ, you know, frequently asked questions. You want to present the problem, and then you want to offer your book as the solution. You want to basically tell a reader what they can expect. You know, how is this book going to solve the problem that they have? Because basically, nonfiction books solve problems. they also inspire, and we can talk about the sort of different types of books that, that you may write as an architect. But, you know, fundamentally, it's solving a problem for your reader. And you want to make them sort of emotionally connect with the pain point that your book is addressing. And so a good description is really a requirement there. You want to keep them on that sales page as long as possible. The longer they stay there, the, you know, the better chance you have of converting them into a sale. And then the final thing is the author page. And for the author page, you want to create a bio. You want to add a picture, basically, of yourself. And you want to link your social media channels, you know, your Facebook and your Twitter. And, you know, you want to think about Amazon, your author page, almost similar to your house profile, you know, where house is more willing to promote you if you've taken the time to create a convincing and legitimate profile. So those are the things that really comprise, you know, getting your listing right on Amazon. Then you're ready to take it to, you know, the sort of next step, which would be, you know, your network of contacts. This would be, you know, referral or network marketing.
So as we get into network marketing, I want to talk a little bit about that and how we, you know, because you mentioned building an email list, and I think that's really important. Like you had mentioned, not only for your book, as you develop your book and get ready to market it, but email lists are incredibly useful for your firm as well. And those are different audiences. So just keep that in mind, that if you're not writing for your clients, which you may be, but if you're not writing for your clients, then they're two separate email lists. But the strategy of building an email list and then using it to market whatever you're promoting is a great one. So Erica, what are your thoughts on how to do that? What's the best way to start getting people on your list?
Well, it really does depend on, you know, who the target audience is. Obviously, if you're writing for other architects, there are, you know, there's different ways of doing that. You know, if you're writing for your clients, which I think, you know, probably most architects would be doing, you're basically taking your brand message and you're in, you know, turning that into a product, which you're going to, or a series of products, which you're hoping to sell to them. And so I think, you know, the way I've approached it is on my website, I, you know, basically put lead magnets, which are, you know, content information that I'm offering up for free to people as an incentive to give me their email address. And so I do that if on certain piece of content, if I'm writing a post on wood stoves, you know, maybe I have a lead magnet that says, you know, 10 things an architect looks for when they're shopping for a wood stove. And I just actually recently did this for a video that I recorded. And so as I'm writing this content, which is building out the content for my website, I'm also providing a means for people interested in that content to sign up to an email list. Then anyone who signs up, you know, using that page, I know they're interested. They're very interested in wood stoves. They're probably interested in, you know, maybe renovating a house. Or I think the idea is to shape the lead magnet to capture the customers, the people that you want on your email list. So if that is, you know, 12 reasons to renovate your home, or if it's, you know, 10 ways to, you know, design an ADU so that it meets the St. Louis building code, whatever it is, it should be really focused and really targeted at the people you're courting, the people you're trying to bring into your business. That way, the email list that you build is, then you know it's comprised of people who are interested in what you're talking about.
Yeah, and those lead magnets are typically, you know, PDF files that are automatically emailed when somebody clicks on and requests those lead magnets. They give you their email address, and a company like AWeber or MailChimp, those companies then automatically send an email out to whomever clicks on the link and sends the email address. It all happens automatically. It's not something that somebody clicks and then you have to send them something. It's all automated through these companies.
That's right. Yep.
Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to Archisnapper and FreshBooks for their support as platform sponsors of Entree Architect. As a platform sponsor, each of these companies have provided funding and support for our overall mission to become an influential force in this profession of architecture. They recognize the need for small firms to build better businesses in order to be better architects. Archisnapper is a simple tool for creating and managing field reports. With Archisnapper, architects can draft reports right on site using their phone or tablets. Arca Snapper is easy to use and saves a lot of time. I put Arca Snapper to test myself and I love it. Once I set it up and understood all the features and how it works, it has become a part of my regular workflow at project meetings. I take notes, shoot photos, sketch my thoughts right on the photo, and it's all automatically uploaded to the cloud. And when I get back to the studio, I log into my desktop, click the button, and my field report is ready to go. Arca Snapper. Grow your business instead of struggling with field reports. If you want to learn more about Arca Snapper and get a free 30-day trial, visit entrearchitect.com/ArcaSnapper. And FreshBooks. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help us small firm architects get organized, save time invoicing, and get paid faster. It takes care of invoicing, expense tracking, estimating, reporting, and it all happens out in the cloud, so you have access to all of your information from anywhere you have access to the internet. And listen up here. Are you listening? Because this is special. I've asked FreshBooks to join me on video to show us around the product. I know that once you see how easy it is to set up and how simple it is to use, you will convert to FreshBooks, like I did. Tim Lee of FreshBooks and I are producing a series of videos, and the first video is available now at entrearchitect.com/FreshBooksVideo. entrearchitects.com/FreshBooksVideo. And when you're ready to give FreshBooks a try, just go to freshbooks.com/architect and sign up for your free 30-day trial. And be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
So, you know, as I think about other sort of basic classifications of marketing channels, there's obviously the referral or network marketing channel, which consists of your existing network, you know, friends, family, colleagues. Now, your colleagues may be well positioned to help you promote this as other architects, but your friends and family, probably less effective. They may promote sort of anything you create. So that's a sort of good basic step. And I think, you know, you can sometimes rely on those people to help you write reviews and reach out to other people in their personal networks that may have relevant contacts. But for the most part, I think you want to move on to the more sort of complex things within the referral or network marketing categories, which are things like email lists, which we just talked about. So you're building a network of contacts and people you can talk about with the content, you know, propose the content for your book to, send them free chapters, you know, tell them about the, ask them for feedback on the title, the cover, things like that. You know, you're creating this network around you that you know is pretty interested in the topic that you're writing about. So that's
this is happening while you're writing, before you publish.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Kind of pulling back the curtain on what you're doing. Yep. And sometimes what that can do is actually help make the product better. And we'll get into that as we get a little further down this list. There are actually even better ways to do that too. The next thing is sort of affiliates. And this is sort of recruiting people to act as your affiliates. And a lot of times, you know, that can be sort of close colleagues, people that have, you know, network connections very similar to your own. And, you know, a great affiliate program to leverage is the Amazon Associates affiliate program. And obviously, if you're selling a book on Amazon, if you can recruit some of your colleagues, your friends and family to act as Amazon Associates for you, they can sort of take the link, the affiliate link for your book, and promote it out to all their channels and say, hey, you know, a friend of mine just wrote this book. I think you'd be interested in it. And so that can act as a good way to sort of repay them too for helping you promote the book. So they obviously get a commission on the back end if they convert a sale, and you're leveraging their extended network to help you sell the book. And obviously, if you're not selling on Amazon, there are options like eJunkie and Gumroad, and they have affiliate programs too. So you can, you know, reach out to your contacts and leverage, you know, create a new affiliate relationship, because, you know, Amazon isn't the only place that you could sell your book. Once you create the book, you could sell it on Gumroad very easily. And, you know, using their affiliate program to compensate people who help you to sell that book is a great way of, you know, selling more copies.
Right. So eJunkie and Gumroad are two companies that you can sign up with, and they allow you to sell the product through their programs. You can set it up on your own website, so somebody can click buy the book here, and it'll send you, they'll send them through that process on Gumroad or eJunkie, and it will automatically send them they'll automatically process the payments and sell them the book. Also, I don't know if eJunkie has it, but I know that Gumroad has their own marketplace as well. And so you can also sell your product through their marketplace.
That's right. Yep. I mean, with all those, I think they're secondary channels, but they are, things that you can leverage, obviously. You want to be on Amazon for the most part.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify what those were.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. So the next thing is something that I use, I'm currently using, and a lot of self-published authors have sort of innovated this technique, and it's called a street team. I call mine something a little different, but basically the concept is you're going to grab a group of your closest fans. Now, if you have people who have read a previous book of yours, this is a little bit easier to do. But people who have signed up to your email list and have emailed you back, people who have been engaging you, you've been having a conversation with them, the idea is to sort of recruit them into an inner circle of close colleagues, friends, that can help you make the content of your book better. And basically you're asking them to act as an affiliate of sorts, but you're giving them some parts of the book, let's say a free chapter. Maybe you're teaching them something that the book teaches. You're using them as a case study. And that's kind of how I'm using it right now, to teach people the concepts in the book. And in return, they offer me feedback. They try out some of the things. They say, oh, this doesn't work for me, or this sentence could be better, or this topic really isn't fleshed out here. And so not only is it a way to get them to help you promote the book, on launch day, they're going to promote it using their social media channels. They're going to write reviews for you. They're going to be an advocate for you. But it's a way to make the book better. It's a way to make them more engaged in the process. And people who contribute to this kind of a process have more ownership over your product. I mean, they're sort of treating your book like it's their own. They've helped to make it a better thing. And these street teams can really be used to great effect, especially on a launch day, to help you, rocket into, a new and noteworthy category, something that's, best-selling category, because you basically create this coordinated effort. You set up a plan beforehand and create a coordinated effort to promote everything at the same time. Everyone's tweeting about it, everyone's writing Facebook posts, they're linking back to it, and suddenly there's this sort of buzz around the book that feels sort of contagious, like almost like you want to share, oh, wow, I've seen this shared in my social media posts, four or five times today. What is this? And so those street teams can really be a great sort of marketing channel for you to leverage.
It can also very quickly help you get those 20 reviews that you're talking about that Amazon is looking for in order for them to start kicking into those promotions as well.
That's right. Yeah. Now, Amazon has started kind of cracking down on this a little bit lately. So I think it makes sense to have, in the past, I've done this where I've gifted the book to people in a sort of inner circle. And I said, I'd appreciate an honest review on this book. If you can leave it on the launch day, that would be great. Amazon has sort of tuned into this, and there's been a lot of programs where you can actually buy reviews on Fiverr.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, they're trying to maintain the integrity of the marketplace. They want people leaving honest reviews. So I think the most important thing is, if you can have people on your street team buy the book, and we'll talk about a launch strategy which will make that maybe more possible. But if you can have them buy the book and then leave the review at a sensible time frame. I mean, obviously, the day that it's launched, if you're launching a 500-page book, it's unlikely that someone's going to have read a 500-page book on launch day. So You kind of have to be smart about it and just think how that's going to look to, someone contemplating buying your book. But I think it's totally legitimate to ask for, an honest review of the book from people who have been engaged in helping you create it. And they'll give a great perspective that I think, a typical reader may not have access to. The last thing I wanted to talk about in referral or network marketing is sort of the obvious one, and that is social media. You have YouTube, you have Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Pinterest. I mean, the list it's pretty huge, obviously. The way I like to use these posts is to kind of share a behind the scenes look at the making of the book process, what I'm working on. Maybe there's some cover photo, cover designs I'm contemplating. Just try and engage people, be social, social media. So, solicit feedback on your ideas. there's a couple of hacks that I also like to use, and that is to use like pinned posts on Facebook or, you know, pinned tweets that stay at the top of your Twitter profile. And those are ways of just, you know, when people are interacting with your profile, they're always seeing a sort of finely tuned marketing message. And, you know, people who are just liking your Facebook page, just, you know, getting engaged with your brand, they're going to click on those things. And so they can be a great way to convert a fan into a customer, basically. Then there's sort of more higher level services that integrate with social media, like Thunderclap. I don't know if you've ever used that, but
I haven't used it, but I've heard about it.
Yeah. So that's sort of like a coordinated social media effort where you get everyone to tweet about your book at the same time. I haven't experimented with this, Mark, but there's so many of these things that you can test and try that it kind of brings up the idea like, well, what do I do? Like, which one of these do I choose?
Right,
and,
right.
You know, my advice is to kind of pick something and dig into it and see how it works for you. For me, Street Teams are working right now and they're providing me good feedback and I feel like they're making the books better. And they're also reaching out into the marketplace in ways that I can't do. And I also find, obviously, that social media is a pretty simple thing to do. Once you set that up, if you set up a Facebook page, you know, the little call to action button at the top of your Facebook profile, shop now, like that's an easy, you know, link to your Amazon page. So some of those things are pretty easy to do. You know, then we get into the sort of deeper level, the sort of more work of content marketing. And, you know, what you and I are doing right now, podcast recording, that's a form of content marketing. So podcasts in particular, they're really, you know, niche focused. And they're a great way to access a community of really engaged people that you can use to market your products to.
Right. Podcasts are very, very effective, but a lot of work. Takes a lot of effort to coordinate interviews like this and then to actually publish that episode and edit it as necessary and get it up there and do it on a consistent basis so you have an audience that is interested in following what you're doing. Very, very effective, but just be warned that it's not as simple as recording a conversation and pushing a button.
I totally appreciate this fact that that I'm leveraging your audience, Mark.
Yeah,
and well, I think you know authors can do that. And I think as someone who doesn't have his own podcast, I'm able to go to different podcasts and talk to the hosts and say, hey, I have a book. I've just written a book. I think your audience would be really interested in it. Make a proposal. And you know, so as an author, an outsider to the podcasting world, I'm able to step into this and, you know, use that as a marketing channel. Yeah, so I think that's
why the network marketing part of what you're talking about, building these relationships with people over time, is so important, because you don't know what you're going to do. And you and I have connected through the networking. I do a lot of that networking. You do a lot of that networking. We kept bumping into each other online. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we've followed each other. We've become friends. We know what's going on with each other. And so when it's time to talk about things like this, I'm leveraging you for your information for this field guide series. And you're leveraging my audience for what you are promoting and what you're doing. And so it's helping both sides and it works really well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think guest posting, you know, other forms of content marketing, you know, guest posting on other websites and, you know, like posting on your own website. Maybe you're guest posting on Arc Daily or Apartment Therapy or whatever it might be. Those are channels, again, that you're tapping into. You're using a larger audience, relevant audience, to bring viewers back to your material, your content. And hopefully converting them into a sale. The last one that I wanted to talk about with content marketing, and I feel like everybody should have this as a part of their website anyway, is a resource page. And this resource page lives on your website, and it's basically, you know, all the resources, things that you've created, resources for clients, customers, you know, whatever your business model is. It's a page that has all this information, and you know, even if there are products that you haven't created. Maybe you sort of curate your book alongside another series of books that are relevant about Passive House, for example. You know, you're an author, and then there are three other books that are, you know, authors of Passive House books. It helps to sort of correlate your expertise, sort of prove your authority in a field, And then also, if you're using affiliate links, it also helps to generate a little extra, you know, revenue for you. So I think that's a really good way of, you know, working at a high level and really being thoughtful about how you're marketing your material to people. You know, make it relevant, make it helpful, make it useful. That's the sort of mantra that I abide by.
Yeah, I love the idea of the resource page, and I like the idea of positioning your book with other books of similar topics that already have that authority, that people already recognize their names and the topics that they're writing about, and putting your book right there next to them elevates your authority as well, just visually by having them, you know, side by side.
That's right. You know, the other thing that's kind of cool that does is if someone clicks on your book or someone clicks on another book that's in that similar category, and they, you know, if enough people do that over time, Amazon starts to learn, oh, hey, this guy's book is related to this other book on the same topic. And so there again, you're kind of tapping into this referral engine, and you know, you really want Amazon on your side when it comes to those things. So those can be really powerful connections. They're subtle, but they're really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's very, very interesting the way that Amazon works and the way that we can build our audience. Is there any other steps to know about?
Well, I think, you know, that there's obviously a lot embodied in sort of all of those steps, and taken together, that's a ton of work.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to maybe paint just a sort of simple launch strategy.
Yeah, that I think anybody that would be a great idea, because that was one of the things I was thinking, is that this is overwhelming. You know, okay, I've written this book, now I got to publish it, and I have to do all of these things, and I need to be an architect and run my architecture firm, and I need to be a dad or a mom. Yeah. There's a lot going on. Forget this book writing thing. I'm not going to do this. It's too much work. But it's not. If you go back to the last episode, it's not that difficult to write it. And I would love to know what is a simple strategy. What should we focus on? What's the most critical pieces of this process that we really need to do in order for this to work?
Right. Okay. So I think, you know, the sample launch strategy that I would propose that is, I think, easy to get started with, but it's still going to take some experimentation. The thing that I would recommend is when you're first releasing your book, to release it as free, which sounds totally crazy.
A little counterintuitive.
Yeah. Until you start thinking about how this sort of Amazon referral engine works. So if you release your book as free, obviously more people are going to be downloading this book. It's pretty easy to say to the street team that you have built around you, right? Or your network of friends and colleagues,
yep,
hey, can you go download this book? And in Amazon eyes, you know, downloading a free book is a little bit different than a paid book. And so they keep separate rankings, but it's still considered a purchase. And so this is the thing that you want when someone leaves you a review, you want the book to appear as though they've purchased it. And so if you grab a whole bunch of people in your close network that are able to download your book on the day that you release it as free, and then start helping you by, you know, reviewing the book, they're going to look and they're going to appear as verified reviews. Now, we want honest reviews. We're not looking for people to lie about the content of the book. Really, you want honest reviews. So try and keep it focused to people who, you know, are really the target market for the book. But if they're leaving reviews here, now Amazon suddenly notices, okay, launch day, there's a whole bunch of people downloading this book. Yes, it's free. Okay, we understand that. There's people reviewing it. There's a buzz about it. There seems to be a buzz about it. Now your book starts to get ranked in the free categories within architecture or whatever, you know, whatever subcategory you've placed the book in. So I recommend doing that for a couple of days. After a couple of days there, you've got some momentum behind the book. You're going to take it and switch it over to a paid program. Started at 99 cents. Now, during that transition, you know, I recommend doing it at like sort of 3 p.m. Eastern. You would do this manually. And that sort of captures the time period in the U.S. when the most number of people are shopping on Amazon. So what happens is your book is still appearing in the free category. So lots and lots of people are still downloading this, you know, seeing this book. When they go to click to buy it, they see it's 99 cents. Well, a 99-cent book is basically free, I think, to most people. So yep. then that transition point starts to help you build momentum in the paid rankings, which is really important, obviously. Now, you can keep it there sort of for a couple of days at the 99-cent level, build some more momentum, and then slowly graduate the price up to whatever your target price is. Now, depending on the length of the book, you know, I like to shoot for the $9.99 price range. And we talked about this last time. The $2.99 to $9.99 price range offers you the 70% royalty. So that's kind of the sweet spot on Amazon. They want you to sell your book, that digital book, basically within that range. So I shoot for the higher end of that because, you know, you've put time and work and effort into this. You want to recoup as much as you can out of it. And so as you transition it up there, the sales will come down for sure, but you will have built enough momentum in this referral engine and hopefully enough reviews that Amazon will sort of take over the marketing for you. That's the thing that we're trying to tap into here ultimately. It's your network and your other contacts, and all those things are secondary to Amazon's referral engine because, you know, they're the ones who are doing 60% of the digital book sales in the US. Like, that, you can't compete with that. It doesn't matter how big your network is. You're not going to be able to affect that kind of, you know, marketing force behind your book. It's just not going to matter. So that would be my recommendation for a super simple strategy for getting your book propelled
into a question.
The sales ranking.
So if you're going from free to 99 cents and ultimately to $9.99, do you do that incrementally up to $9.99, or do you just go from 99 cents to $9.99?
No, I would do it incrementally because one of the things that you're trying to do is kind of gather sales data yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, not that you don't already have enough to do, but I like to track the sales sort of daily. So I have, you know, a thing that I do at the end of the day where I look at the previous day's sales. And so I can look at how prices may have changed or been affected. And as a new author, you're just trying to gather all this information and try and, you know, help you make the best decision possible. Your book, you know, the best price for your book may not be $9.99. You know, there may be some other price anchor. But if you don't experiment with it along the way, you really have no way of knowing that. So I would recommend sort of taking small jumps. Now, when you're giving the book away for free, basically, you know, you can't do that for more than 5 days. And I wouldn't recommend doing that for more than 5 days, really. You know, you do a couple of days at the most, and then start transitioning it to the 99 cents. Again, a couple of days, and then start ramping it up over, you know, a week's time, and see how sales change.
And you can create a marketing plan around this. So you can basically just write maybe in an Evernote and say, okay, it's going to be free for 2 days, and then it's mm-hmm. going to go to 99 cents, and we'll have it at 99 cents for 2 days, and then you can incrementally move it up. But then also in your marketing, you could start saying that, you know, yes, for 2 days, my book is free. It's ultimately going to be XYZ number, but it's, you know, it's today it's free. So download it before, you know, this date. And then there's a deadline, and then that way you'll get more people to get over there and do it. And then when it goes to 99 cents, you could say, okay, it's 99 cents. You know, it's only going to be 99 cents until Thursday.
That's right.
And then that way you can kind of create some momentum, you know, create some urgency that, you know, you're not going to get it for 99 cents after this date. So you want to get over there and do it. And so that'll help you get more downloads and more sales.
Right. And you can kind of, you know, you want to baby your list, you know, the people who have signed up to your email list, if you have one. Treat them right, you know, say, hey, look, I'm giving this to you guys for free or 99 cents or wherever you decide it is, you know, let them know, give them the inside track. That's a benefit for being on your email list or a benefit for liking your social media account, your Twitter page, your Twitter profile or whatever. I think there's ways to kind of be a little ninja about it and make it fun for people too.
So you had said that there's an issue with using your street team for reviews if you're giving the book away.
So
is it good to wait until the 99-cent purchase starts happening before you encourage them to start writing those reviews? Are those reviews more valuable in the rankings?
You know, I don't have any published data on that, Mark. I don't know. As far as I know, there's a difference between a verified review, that is someone who's bought, you know, purchased your book. And like I said, Amazon considers a free download as a purchase. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between that and an unverified review. That is, you know, someone, say, if you don't have the digital rights management set up on your Kindle book and someone loans your book to someone else, they could leave a review on it. So that's an example of an unverified review. Or it's a colleague of yours who you lent a physical book and they could also leave an unverified review. They are, you know, those reviews have a lower, much lower weighting in the review algorithm. And that's the thing that, you know, when you search for a book, you're looking at the star rating. It's a star rating between 1 and 5. Even if someone leaves you a 5-star rating, if it's an unverified review, next to no weight at all. Right, so,
So the free downloads still count.
They
so
count.
So as long as it's, as long as they download it off the Amazon system, then they're seeing on their end that it's a verified, that somebody has purchased the book, whether it's free or 99 cents or whatever, and then have left a review after they've done that download. So that's where that ranking, the weight for the ranking starts working.
That's right. Yeah. Now, another way to do it, and this is what I'm experimenting with now, is to have the person on your street team leave the you basically buy the book. When they leave a review, then you'll offer to send them a gift card to sort of, you know, say, look, I really appreciate that you did this. I appreciate you're a part of my street team. I appreciate the valuable feedback that you've given me. But that in no way links you to sort of paying for a review necessarily. You know what I mean? Leave an honest review for me. When you do that, I don't care what the review. If it's a 1-star review, I don't care. I'll reimburse you for the cost of the book because I appreciate the help that you've given me along the way. So that's another way that where you don't have to necessarily offer the book for free. I do think as a new author, the sort of free to paid transition is really important. Once you've established your authority in the marketplace, I think it's fine to release your book as a paid product. You already have a group of people who are following you, and as if we get into some of the higher level techniques, if you have a series, a book in a series, you're releasing volume 2 in the series, Amazon, again, they're going to do the promotion for you. You basically, told them, hey, this is book 2 in the series. Amazon loves series. I don't know about your kids, but my kids are reading, almost every book they're reading is like one series of after another. It's like 10 books in a series. And so Amazon knows this, and they know it's a huge revenue maker for them. And so they promote your book that way. So I think once you've established yourself, there are ways that you can move beyond these basic techniques.
Yeah. Outstanding. Great information. Again, if you want to know how to get your book written and get it up on Amazon, check out episode 97. You can just go to entrearchitect.com/episode97. This is episode 99, one more to 100. Eric, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate all of this information in all of these field guide series. I'm sure we'll do more in the future. Sure. I'm looking forward to learning more about your third book. Your studio is 30 by 40 Design Workshop. You can go to 30by40.com. That's all spelled out. On Twitter, at Eric Reinholdt. That's ericreinholdt. Eric Reinholdt.
Got it.
Thanks for sharing your knowledge here on the Entree Architect podcast.
Happy to do it. Yeah, the next volume, Architect and Entrepreneur Volume 2, comes out November 30th. So I hope everybody will pick it up and learn more, about these topics and techniques, ways to hack your practice.
Excellent. November 30th. Watch the blog, watch social media. You'll definitely be seeing it both from Eric and myself. So Eric, thanks again.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me. Good talking with you.
We're growing here at Entree Architect, and it only happens with your help. So share a link to this episode. Go to your email right now and send a link to all of your friends. entrearchitect.com/episode99. Do it right now. Send an email to all of your architect friends. Put it on Twitter. Put it on Facebook. I see your tweets. I see your posts on Facebook. And I thank you so much for supporting me. And I appreciate all of the support that you give me and for helping me spread the word. And I thank you. Complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode99. Yes, number 99. What comes after 99? That's right. Episode 100 is coming up next week. Do not miss it. It features you, the Entree Architect community. Do not miss it. It is going to be an excellent episode. And a great way to not miss that episode or any blog article, everything from Entree Architect, is to subscribe to my weekly newsletter. It's free. And you can do that at entrearchitect.com/newsletter. I share a weekly letter from me to you with links to everything that we're doing here at Entree Architect every week. Every Friday afternoon, it drops in your inbox and you have everything you need. You get a little message from me before the weekend. You get a link to the blog. You get a link to the podcast. What could be better? So sign up at entrearchitect.com/newsletter. My name is Mark Arlepage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. And I encourage you to share what you know. I'll see you next week. And thank you very much for listening.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.